Thanks for joining us again on the Unknown Strength podcast. This is episode number 18. I'm your host, Mac.
And I'm your co-host, as always, Brenton.
I like that, as always.
Always.
Episode number 18, we have a very colourful guest on the show for you guys today. His name is Mr. James Brasco, and he's one of the competitors on the upcoming BOA Super 8 Submission Grappling Series, which will be the fourth edition. It'll be held here in Melbourne on June the 23rd. And we put together the BOA Super 8 Series on the podcast, where we're going to interview a couple of the competitors. On one of our previous episodes, we had the organizer of the event, Mr. Sai Naji, as a guest on our show, and it was fascinating to hear the journey of how BOA came to be and his other event, Rebellion Muay Thai, and just to hear the real passion that he has for the martial arts and his love of sharing that with everybody through these events he puts on. So we're getting behind him. We're promoting the event, and James Brasco, our guest today, is one of those competitors.
Alongside DJ Jackson, Craig Jones, Charles Negromonte, Mike Perez, guys like that.
There's a whole bunch of guys on that event. And tell us a bit about James and what he's done, please, Brenton.
Yeah, so he's a black belt under Pablo Popovich. He's a jiu-jitsu world champion and coming from a really strong wrestling background, so a really high wrestling pedigree. USA Wrestling Hall of Famer, AAU, Grand National Champion. You know, finished high school with a record of 127-10, which ended up taking him into Division I territory, which on a scholarship. Won a lot of tournaments in that sort of realm and eventually became a member of the Elite Century Club. Sounds pretty awesome from the name of it anyway. had ventured into MMA, had about 15, 14 professional fights, and all around just a really gritty fighter.
Absolutely. So, yes, it's a fun interview. Lots of very controversial and interesting things being discussed, which you'll come to find out. But before we get into the interview, we need to thank our sponsors. So, first of all, the MMA Fight Store have been fantastic to us. Their website is www.mmafightstore.com.au. They've got the best range of combat sports equipment, both online and in store. And a shout out to their new location in Sydney's Inner West. So get on down to the MMA Fight Store, mention the Unknown Strength podcast, and get a 10% discount. Also, we need to thank the Melbourne band Killed by Technology for giving us our intro song, which is their most recent single called Unsociable Behaviour. So please check them out and follow them on Facebook, Instagram and SoundCloud. They're called Killed by Technology. And our newest sponsor, Gripedo, www.gripedo.com. For those unaware, the Gripedo is it's a fantastic grip training tool. It's got lots of different uses, which will suit a lot of different needs from combat sports athletes, especially grapplers. But I'm in the process of using it to its full capability, and I will be reviewing it on an upcoming episode. I know I've said that several times now, but it's true. I haven't exhausted all its possibilities, and there is. You would be surprised, but I have been using it diligently, and I'm really enjoying it. But I need to know everything about what I can and can't do with it, and I still don't have the bucket of sand, which I'll explain to you guys in the review. So stay with us, stay patient, you will get your review of the Gripedo.
And keep investigating, Mac.
I shall be doing just that. We also need to thank our good friend James Tomlinson, JT Tenacity. He was a guest on our show, I think episode number 5. But his brand new product, the Jugo, which is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu-based card game, his website is www.jiu-go.com. Tell us a bit about what Jugo is, please.
Yeah, submission orientated card game where you submit your foes by working through a hierarchy of positions and transitions, sweeps, all the way until a submission. And then you finish your opponent. So fun game. Played it with some of my family, and they've actually enjoyed it. They don't do jiu-jitsu, so it's quite accessible to people. The concept resonates. A lot of fun.
A lot of fun indeed. And if you buy a pack of Jugo cards and you get a card with the number 1 or the number 500 on it, reach out to James Tomlinson, JT Tenacity, on Facebook, because he's going to buy those cards back off you. There's a cash prize for cards with the number 1 or 500 on it. So get on that. In an announcement, the Unknown Strength is presenting the Daru Strong Combat Sports Performance Seminar. The Australian tour will include Sydney and Melbourne dates. Coach Phil Daru is the head coach over at American Top Team in Coconut Creek, Florida.
And our former guest.
Indeed. He was on our show a few episodes ago, and that was a monster episode. So every strength and conditioning coach out there who's involved in working with MMA fighters or grapplers, combat sports athletes in general, go back, listen to our episode with Phil Daru. If you're in Australia, get on board with this this seminar tour, because his seminars are legendary. Like, people are raving about the run of dates he's done through the US and Canada and parts of Europe. He'll be in Poland, I think, towards the end of this month, presenting at the Combat Sports Performance Summit, which is a big deal. There's a lot of big names in our industry speaking at that event. So the seminar tours, the dates, Sydney on Saturday the 4th and 5th of August. That's 9 a.m. To 5 p.m. both days. It's going to be held at Lift Performance Centre, which is in Redfern. The investment is $850 early bird and $900 regular. So get in quick to snap up those early bird tickets before they're all gone.
Check him out on Instagram as well. I mean, I think that's a good sneak peek of sort of what he's about and his training methodologies and stuff. And, you know, you see some of the UFC fighters and he's working with some of those Bellator guys and girls. So
that's right. His Instagram handle is Daru Strong, one word. And yeah, so you'll get a good taste for what he's about on his Instagram page. He's going to be covering a whole bunch of stuff, which is specifically for fight, for members of the fight community, program design for fighters' performance, periodization for each individual circumstance, understanding the bioenergetic demands of the sport, assessment protocols, special exercises, the art of coaching fighters, power development for fighters, functional range conditioning cars, dynamic warm-up, and he's going to break down the techniques for his top 3 strength lifts for fighters. Okay, so that's all on day one. Day two will be sports and nutrition for combat sports, peri-training supplementation, weight cutting, his 7-day protocol, nutrient breakdown, the benefits of sodium, refuel and rehydration post weigh-ins, and a question and answer session. So again, the tickets are $850 early bird, $900 for the full price. Those prices are in Australian dollars. So you can you just search Daru Strong Sydney or Daru Strong Melbourne on Facebook, and you'll get to the event page, and then you can go through and buy your tickets there. Any questions on anything to do with that, please email me at mac@theunknownstrength.com. And I'll give you the dates for the Melbourne seminar. The Daru Strong Melbourne seminar is on Saturday the 28th and Sunday the 29th of July. The event will be held at the Strong Room, which is in Oakley in Melbourne. And the investment is $500 for the Saturday only, or $600 for both the Saturday and the Sunday. Now, this is a pretty unique event because on the Saturday, Phil will be taking everybody through the lecture, workshop, seminar, educational component of the tour. But on the Sunday, we're going to be watching the UFC live with Phil at the Strong Room in Oakley. We're going to project it up on the screen. We're going to provide food and drinks for everybody. And we're basically going to hang out with Phil, watch 3 of his top fighters compete at UFC Live on Fox number 30, which I believe is in Calgary in Canada. So it's going to be a really, really cool event. He's Phil's main man, Dustin Poirier, is fighting in the headline against Eddie Alvarez, which will be the second time these guys have fought. It's going to be an absolute cracker of a fight. And also on the card, you've got two of Phil's other longtime athletes, Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Tisha Torres, who are fighting each other. So Phil said to me a couple of times, you know, this is going to be stressful for him watching these two girls that he cares about so much go head to head and fight each other. But, you know, this is the sport, you know. So expect emotions to be very, very high for the Sunday watching the UFC with Phil. And also there'll be an extended Q&A session after the event's finished. So
is this over beers? Is this at the event?
Mate, this is I'm pretty sure there's going to be some beer involved.
Okay.
All right. So, but there'll be an extended Q&A session.
So why don't we call this Have a Beer with Phil?
Have a Beer with Phil Sunday. I love it. But yeah, it's going to be a bit of a hang, man. It's going to be a good time. And what I'm trying to get at is there'll be heaps of value for everybody on the Sunday. You're going to be able to actually get inside Phil's head and shoot the shit with him and actually get some of his secrets. You get the stories about what went on in all their camps and all this kind of stuff. So there's a whole bunch of really, really cool, valuable shit you'll be able to pry from Phil's brain on the Melbourne dates and the Sydney dates for the Daru Strong Combat Sports Performance Seminar Tour. And lastly, we just want to make a shout out to Phil Daru's podcast. Okay, so he was a guest of ours, but he also has his own podcast, which is called the Fight Strength Podcast. His main man, his co-host, Jason Burgos, over there at the Fight Strength Podcast. I've been in touch with him over the last few days. He's a great man. He's actually a contributor for Sure Dog and MMA Sucker. And he's got a fantastic article coming out on Sure Dog in the next week or so on Kayla Harrison, which is
the pretty... Judo world champ.
That's right. She's one of the most highly decorated... I think she is the most highly decorated judo competitor ever to come out of the States. So, and she's made her transition into MMA, which is really, really exciting for all of us. So keep your eye out on SureDog.com for Jason Burgos' article on Kayla Harrison. I think we've just about got everything covered there and we can get straight into the interview. What do you reckon?
Let's do it.
All right, man. Enjoy the interview, guys.
Okay, we're rolling. James, welcome to the Unknown Strength Podcast. Really awesome to have you on, man.
It's great to be here. It's cool. I'm glad to oblige and show up on time.
Thank you. Much appreciated. We have been trying to get this happening for a few weeks. So you're a jiu-jitsu world champion, an MMA fighter, and apparently from what I've seen, you're also a model. And I'm not saying that just based on what I, you know, looking at your face now. I mean, I'm not going to disagree, but that's apparently you've got that little job title as well.
Yeah. I used to think it was cool to say model. Now I kind of hide that with my, you know, in the martial arts realm and in the, look at the shit Luke Rockhold gets for being a model. Everyone makes, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you got to pick whether you're a pretty boy or you're a tough guy, you know. It's
can't be both.
But yeah, I have literally done some legitimate work. I was a very into fitness modeling. I've been in a bunch of mags. I worked for a company down here called Sportsbook of Miami, so I've done some commercials, some good commercials and some nice ads for GNC. I've been doing that for years. When I started right out of college.
Nice. And, that's a good little side hustle to have.
So I enjoy it, but there's not a lot down here in Florida. So because number one, it's a very Spanish type of market. Everything they do here is they'll be like, oh, we're going to film this. And like, I went to Venezuela and I did a whole campaign for 3 days in Venezuela. Yeah. I was like the superstar of Venezuela. I was like in the Times Square of Venezuela. My picture was everywhere. I was like in every alcohol store and I was up on a big wall, but it didn't do me any good because I'm here.
Did you actually go down to Venezuela in person?
I was ready to fly there for a week so I could take in some of the Venezuelan women so I could give them some autographs and whatever else they wanted. Listen, interesting story. I went to Buffalo to my girlfriend's for the week. Oh, this is exactly how it always goes. It's incredible. Right. So I'm in Buffalo. I'm at her friend's house, you know, trying to put a good image on, and I get a call from Sportsbook. Of course they would call me when I'm in Buffalo, right? They can't call me when I'm sitting in Miami for the last 6 months before that. They got to call me when I'm in Buffalo on a planned trip. I went in the bathroom. She goes, I got a job for you Wednesday. I go, okay. She goes, it's in Venezuela. I went, oh my God. She goes, it's, she says it's pretty good money. And she named the number. I went, all right. Because I got to know soon, you know, blah, blah, blah. I go, well, that's, you know, nice notice, whatever. And long story short, the girlfriend was not happy about me leaving the family trip. I flew out of Buffalo. They flew me out of Buffalo to Miami and then Miami to Venezuela. I felt guilty the whole trip because she was giving me a hard time. But I did it. It ended up being great. So funny. I ended up doing the job. I met a lot of cool people. It was a complete set. It was for that one of their the biggest winery in Venezuela. The name will come to me. I can't remember what it was, but it's can you believe I can't remember? It was like a rugby outfit theme. But anyway, when I came back and then when everything came out 6 months later, the girlfriend thought it was cool all of a sudden, you know. After the finished product, she gave me nothing but shit. And am I allowed to swear on here?
Of course you are.
Yeah, sure.
She gave me nothing but shit about it. It was incredible. It was miserable. But then whenever it was over, she was sending it to all her friends. Look at my guy. Look at my guy. That was a highlight one. I also worked on the Versace movie.
Interesting.
The movie? What do you mean?
Well, they just had a major series in Versace. It was on FX. Like, you know how... O.J. Simpson, that was a really big hit.
Yeah.
Well, the second one they did was The Death of Versace.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Anyway, the scenes that I was in, they cut them. I got paid and everything. We were all looking forward to it. Everyone knew. Everyone had the freaking TV on ready to watch my episode. And here, they cut it from 7 episodes to 6. So they cut the party scene out.
Oh, wow.
Featuring James Brusco.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you, though. It's probably a good thing they cut that scene.
Why is that?
I was probably would have got ragged on for probably the rest of my life if they would have filmed that.
What, just too sexy or what?
No, I was entirely too sexy for that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, man.
Real quick, interesting thing. So she, all right, this is how it goes. They'll call me and go, hey, she goes, do you want to make $1,000 for the day? I'm like, well, yeah. She's like, okay. They're filming this movie, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right. This is the same agent, by the way. Of course. It's the same agent, right? So you're going to get the feel for what this agent's like. All right. So then 3 weeks later, she goes, hey, are you okay with 600? They're only going to pay you 600. She said 1,000 for a couple hours, and it was 600 for like – I'm like, yeah. Then a couple days before, it became – up to 10 to 12 hours. So now I'm at 600 for 10 to 12 hours.
Wow.
Right. So the day of the thing, I was trying to miss it on purpose. I was calling them, telling them I was going to be late. I'm sorry, I can't. And they're like, James, we really need you to come. Just get here when you can. I got there. All I saw were transvestites or what were dressed up to be. It was basically Versace back in the day when he did the pool parties back in the crazy days. It was very... can we say open? That's right. The word we're going to use. Okay. Open. And I walk in here. I'm like, you know, everyone you get fitted for an outfit, then you go to set. Well, I'm sitting there, and I tried missing it. Called them twice. Was trying to get off the hook. They wouldn't let me off the hook. When I got there, like Naomi Campbell. Do you remember Naomi Campbell?
Yeah, man. Yep.
They had a look-alike Naomi Campbell model, like the real tall black girl. African-American, hot. They had everything. Beautiful women, party boys, you know, the whole gamut of stuff in the pool. Pool shot, whatever. And I end up being one of the hot pool guys.
Which, right.
Once you're already there, you're in like, your rugby holy suit? Shit. So this is a good story because – I was going to be anonymous in that scene. And then all of a sudden, when they had like 5 of us, and it's very random where they put you. I don't think the director's really thinking, I'm going to put you there and you there, you know. I think he's just like, okay, which one of you can dance? And he throws one of the guys up on top of the wall. If it's up on top of the wall of a party scene, So this guy was the number one feature of the film, of that scene. So anyway, they're running through the scene. They're all there. Ricky Martin, what's her name? Not Selma Hayek, Penelope Cruz. They're all there. Anyway, they do this scene, and the guy that they picked up to put on the wall, the feature, where all the camera work's going to be on, right? He can't dance. He's stinking the place up. And I remember the guy next to me goes, dude, he can't dance. They're gonna replace him. So they stop the scene. You hear the director go, all right, we got to replace this guy in the front.
Ouch.
Like everyone knew. Yeah, right.
Oh, that's brutal.
So he walks up to us, and we're all four standing there. And he goes, all right, which one of you can dance? And I said, well, now, part of me didn't want to say yes. But it was like, I think I wanted to say yes and then not get picked. At least I would have said, well, I tried, right?
Right.
Well, we all kind of said yes. And he just kind of picked me. All right, you? And I went, yeah, I can dance. He goes, there you go, buddy. He goes, all right, you're up. Before I knew it, I was swimming across the pool and getting up on the ledge. All of a sudden, now I'm the fucking dancer in the scene. But, you know, it was like, but I'm thinking to myself, it's kind of cool, but maybe this is not so cool, you know?
Party boy Brasco.
They end up doing the scene, and they're like, all right. He goes, all right, buddy, you better know what you're doing. And I went, yeah, and I did a little dance. He goes, you better dance better than that. And then I knew right then and there what he wanted. I'm like, oh, shit, he wants that go-go boy type bullshit, you know. Anyway, he said, hit it. And I don't know what hit me, but I said, well, I'm here. I might as well do a great job.
Yep.
So I did the whole thing. Ricky Martin, Penelope Cruz, all these people are watching. Everyone's there. I'm the focal point of the scene. They got the big camera. The camera, did you ever see that movie where Tom Cruise got, where the world got destroyed?
Yeah, the Truman Show.
Big machine. What's it called?
Is it Truman Show? Where it's a fabricated reality?
Tom Cruise.
End of Days.
With the big machine would suck people. They would just suck people out of the house. Aliens.
I know what you're talking about. Something about The Last Day or something.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the point was this camera was in my face. It looked like, it was like the machine.
War of the
was
Worlds.
That's it. It was going in my face.
War of the Worlds. Okay.
Down my body as I was dancing. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, oh shit, dude, if this gets on TV, I'm done. Like, my image is ruined. Like, and he's going up and it's going back. And it's like they have a cake with candles because they are filming his birthday scene at the pool. So anyway, it goes on. Finally, he goes, cut. Everyone gave me a standing ovation.
Wow.
I saved the scene. So I was leaving. Everyone's like, wow, dude, did they hire you to do that? I'm like, no, holy. Like, you're going to look so good on screen. And the girls are in the back. They're giving me. Anyway, that was cool. But it was like a mixed reaction of thinking, do I really want this to be shown or not? So anyway, that's my Versace story. It didn't happen.
Is all I can say is wow.
Well, I would have went from like, you know, I what do you wear whenever you wear like a gi in jiu-jitsu, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then no gi shorts and a t-shirt. Well, this I'd have been wearing a little less. It might, you know, it wouldn't have been so image producing, so to say, something maybe. I probably would have had, I don't know. Anyway, it didn't happen. I'm here.
Which way do you want to go?
So I've done a bit of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's good, man.
So what about, you know, you obviously, I think you came through as a wrestler and then moved on to jiu-jitsu. You know, I think you're looking up your record. You went 127-10 in high school, becoming like a Grand National Champ, AAU Grand National Champion. You're a USA Wrestling Hall of Famer.
Yes.
And you also entered the Division I on a scholarship, winning a heap of tournaments and becoming a member of what you guys have established over there as the Elitist Century Club for wins on the Division I level. Us being from Australia, you know, not having that wrestling culture particularly available or accessible, definitely nowhere near on the scale of the States. You know, what does that mean? Like, what's the significance of that?
The significance of that is the physicality that I probably have. And when I mean physicality, I'm talking about the grip, bump in the head when I shoot in, the force I'm going to be able to put in, you know, just the physicality of just like of the wrestling of, you know, being 5 years old and being, you know, grappling since then and having people try to put chicken wings on me. So it just gives me a physicality type advantage. Like, I think, you know, a balance, just know my whereabouts. I think, I mean, I did it since I was young and I was always focused on winning something, you know, goal oriented. Mm-hmm. I was like from 10, 11, 12, I was winning states, like, you know, the whole way up to 14, undefeated in junior high, section champ, four-time section in high school, four-time county, you know, 127 wins, 4-3, state final.
How many wins have you had before, you know, you sort of experienced your first loss?
Well, I was the cadet national champion, which put me in the USA Hall of Fame, by the way, cadet national champion. That's a huge, they call it Fargo these days because I'm a little bit, it's been a while. So right now they put it in Fargo. So that was a big win for me. So, but how many losses? Oh man, when I was a freshman, I think I was at 5-2 at one point. Then I went on this huge run,
right?
And I didn't lose for a while. So, you know, there are some losses in there, you know, here and there, but not many. I think I lost 5 as a freshman, and then I had 10. So I only lost 5 more in the next 3 years.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I lost 5. Yeah, I lost 5, and then I lost 3. Then I only lost 2 more, and I was undefeated my senior year. So
what did your particular wrestling style look like? You know, was it single legs, double legs, ankle picks? What sort of techniques were part of your arsenal?
At this point in time, with everything and all the experience I have, it's everything. I really have the ability to go up top, toss you. I have the ability to. I got a vicious front headlock. And I got super shots like double leg and single leg. So, and I'm just telling you how it is. It's been so long, man. I better, yeah. I'm just good at every area of the takedown wrestling thing. I mean, I used to throw everyone. It's interesting. When I was a freshman in high school, I was throwing everybody.
Yep.
I was known as throwing everybody because I was a little bit more fearless back then.
Right.
But then as I had more to protect junior, senior year, I was becoming more basics. So I was hitting doubles and singles and I wasn't taking the crazy throws.
Right. So the throws, but, obviously, you know, are you suggesting the throws are a much higher risk game in the wrestling world?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you go up higher, but you know, you can go up in points higher but it's a little more of a risk.
Right.
So I developed this, and in order to be in a college wrestler and go Division One, you have to. That's the key to this. To be a Division One wrestler, you have to have great basics. You can't just depend on the big throw or the big move. That would be the same as like Let's just say the being a world champ jiu-jitsu. You can't depend on one submission every match. You're going to have to grind through a few, and you're going to have a good guard, good pass, some good half guard positions to grind through. You're not going to be able to throw everyone around. It's going to be a fight. There's going to be fights in there where it's gritty in the grind. So, you know, I go in my phases. Sometimes I want to shoot more, and sometimes I want to throw people. You know, it's different. But the guys in jiu-jitsu, man, I mean, they don't want to wrestle.
Yeah.
They drop. Listen, I've only been taken down once in 17 years of competition. Once. Chris Weidman.
Right.
That's not such a bad thing, right? UFC, who cares? I was taken down by Chris Weidman. Weidman. One time. So a lot of the guys don't even challenge it because they figure I'm going to drop. They're going to drop the guard. In these particular rules at the BOA, you know, the first 5 minutes is submission only. It's ADCC rule.
Yep. And do you think that's something that favors your style?
No, it doesn't favor my style at all. Not at all. Actually, I'm. It's okay. It's okay. It's not. But you know, a guy has no wrestling's gonna tussle around a little bit.
Yeah.
He might stand with me. If I take him down, I get no points for it.
Yeah.
And if he takes himself down or pulls, he gets no points against himself. So I mean, it puts me in like it's interesting. So then the first 5 minutes, I'll go out there and I'm hesitant. Why am I hesitant? Because I don't want to take the guy down and not get any points for it. right? So I'll tend to back away and shy away. Whereas he, I've had guys that have no wrestling come at me because they're just like begging me to take them down, or they want to, you know, just it's free.
Yeah,
it's like free.
Yeah, low risk.
It's like it's low risk. They can get taken down, and we're gonna end up on his butt. I'm gonna be on top, just as if he would. So the rules. Then when you go into the next 5 minutes of the points, if he's already on his butt, he just stays there. He's just taking the takedown away from me completely.
So how are you going to work around that?
Well, I think maybe there might be a few people in the division that might, you know, want to wrestle a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
One of those being DJ Jackson, you think? He'll be on our podcast later today.
Yeah, he's one of the really – he's a really good wrestler, and, you know, he doesn't shy away. But, I mean, you know, I mean, there's strategy involved. I mean, he's not going to tell me – you know, if he goes out, it's a really interesting, like a guy like that, you know, there's a little ego involved, and you want to say, oh, you know, if a guy pulls, usually that shows that you're kind of accepting the fact that he can take you down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it signaling defeat in a way when it comes to stand up and sort of conceding?
Right. And I don't mean, but it's all, So, you know, it doesn't always mean that, too, because maybe the guy wants to play bottom and shoot for the sweep.
There could be a few guys like that at Boa, yeah?
Right, absolutely. So the point – we'll get into that, of course. Yeah, so, you know, as far as the wrestling thing, so that you don't want to say, oh, you don't want to, you know, call someone this or that if they pull. I mean, I think the pulling – I really like these ACB rules they have that were – you get 1 minute. 1 minute you can't pull, the first 1 minute, which I like. That means I can come at you for a minute hard trying to earn those takedown points.
I think they're going to have to work to defend, exactly.
But then after a minute, then you're free to pull. Mm. I think that's better than nothing. I think that's actually somewhat fair. I like that a little bit. That's cool. But this ADCC dropped your ass in the first 5 seconds.
Well, do you know what I think is really important about that and really interesting about that is that if you can't pull guard in the first minute, I think it's going to become abundantly clear what their strategy is if they're just running away on the feet for a minute. You know, I think it puts a lot of pressure on them to bring something to the fight.
Yeah.
And a minute is a long time to run away and, you know, defend shots and throws from someone like yourself.
It is. Like, if you get me or not. But that's interesting you say that, because think of it this way. That's the same mindset that the first 5 minutes of submission only, right?
Yeah.
So right there's no point. So the guy on the bottom, not mentioning any names, Craig Jones, the guy on the bottom, not mentioning any names. I would never mention anyone's name, Craig Jones. They can pull guard, and then they can just come at you like a freaking tornado with sub attempts and everything, because they don't have to worry about the pass, the back take, nothing.
Yep.
Because there's no points, so it gives them it's a different and then on a guy it gives, and then I'm backing off looking for the points, or you got to really mix it in and out, right?
Yeah.
An interesting story. So then when it goes to points, if that was a different way around, that guy on the bottom is going to be a lot more careful about his entries and how he comes in and looks for that lock or looks to try to get under you.
Yep.
Because if he gets sloppy, I'm going to slide something through. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get behind. I'm going to get a point.
Well, that's punishable.
Also off a transition, you get a guy out of bounds where you get the transitions where you go out of bounds neutral, you got to come back in standing. Once you're standing, you can't sit back down. So, you know, it's the same mindset, but it still is advantageous for the butt scooter. Absolutely.
But surely you can, you know, if you do pass him in those first 5 minutes, whoever that may be, you know, if you get to an advantageous position, like so I control the back or the mount, you know, surely you could just put them away.
Oh yeah, surely. Right then and there. No problem. I mean, shit, you get you get backside, whatever. And you just,
just sink it in.
Do you want to burn? Do you want to blow your wad right away?
Sure.
Going for that kill. It's a tough game. It's as mentally challenging as it is physical. at this level. That's my point. So it's like playing chess. I mean, everyone has their skill set, their strengths, and their approach, and I respect all of it. You know, that's fine. But, and you know, this rule set causes you to have a different approach. So this is going to be, you know, different than a fight to win, different than an IBJJF, different than an ACB. You know, so you have to keep that all in mind. You know, so it's going to be interesting, and matchups mean everything. It's going to matter. It just matters where you end up in the bracket and who you get. You know, and if you can implement your style versus them, it is what it is.
Exactly.
The best thing is not even really worry about it and think about it. Like right now, I'm already thinking about it too much. Like you just got to wave it off and just go. You just got to take what happens and who you get and just work with it, and that's it. Because you can't control it. You're just gonna have to, you know. That's it.
Do you tactically avoid trying to think about your fights or your competitions coming up? I mean, you just mentioned, you know, I'm trying not to sort of think about it too much, but.
Yeah, because you'll draw. Listen, everyone in that bracket's tough. Everybody. I mean, I look at you. Just do. It's. You sit there and you wish you get that person, or you wish you get that person. And the fact is, they just bring a whole new set of problems. And it's, you know, and sometimes you might give someone more credit than they deserve. And it's better just to go with the flow and not think about it. Right? I mean, you got to know your game plan and have. You might want to scout everybody a little, kind of have an idea of what's going on, but you don't want to be stressing out and worrying about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Without doubt, you don't, because it's going to be at this level. It's like, who's going to have a great day? You could run that tournament five times, maybe have five different winners.
Right.
You know, depending on whatever, a call or this or that.
So I guess I'd hate for you to sort of talk too much about it, but at the same time, I'd love to hear, what sort of thoughts do you have around the competitors in the BOA 8 tournament?
Well, let's see. I know. First of all, Craig Jones is too good for me now.
Right.
Craig Jones friend requested me last year, but now he don't know my name. Craig Jones and I had a nice conversation. He wanted to bring me down to visit, hang out. We talked real nice.
Was this initially?
Oh yeah. Now I write him, and he's Mr. Big Time now. I can't get his attention. I have to make an appointment.
What's your secret to get an appointment with him?
I don't know. I think. That's what I'm trying to. I don't know if he's even seeing my messages. I mean, he's getting bombarded everywhere. He's traveling. He's so busy. I don't know.
No, I think so. Yeah. I think he definitely exploded. You know, someone like Craig's or on the same team at Absolute MMA, Maromba, and man, that guy exploded very quick.
That's what I'm saying. I remember he friend requested me. It's so funny. This is the truth. Chris Weidman friend requested me.
Yeah. It's something to celebrate.
Oh, well, he needed it. He wanted to know information on what kind of manager he should get, because I had this management and what I thought of this, and I was giving him tips, and I looked, and then the guy turns into UFC champ. Now he doesn't remember that advice I gave him. But Craig Jones, made me think, Craig Jones in a much smaller way. I'm just saying that I've written him a few times. I haven't been able to get it, but I'll get his attention in Australia.
And obviously a bit of veiled meaning there. What's the little intent there?
Yeah, what's the beef, man? The beef?
I'm sure if I'm in the bracket, he's, you know, obviously he can't ignore me. Everyone has to kind of be mindful of everyone in the bracket and what they bring. So, you know, of course. I'm sure he's thinking about he's probably practicing his sprawl or whatever his bottom game, his entry to leg attacks and all that. While I'm up here practicing my defenses and different things like that. So, yeah, I mean, you could roll that right into the DJ too. DJ's a wrestler, top guy, powerful. So I know what he brings. You know, we competed once against each other.
Yeah.
And, I know exactly. I've been there, and he's me. He's basically the same. We're really the same. I have a lot of adoration, and I like his style, and I like what he does. Because, you know, if I would ever say anything about his style, I'm saying about my style.
Right.
I like what he does. probably the only disadvantage maybe DJ might have in this is he's not physically as big as everybody. He might, because he's a 70.
Really? Is he? He's pretty tanky. He's in the 80s, isn't he?
I know he can gain weight. Listen, I'm grabbing for straws for advantages here. Don't ruin my mindset. But he is a tank. It might even make, you know, but I'm just saying that, you know, maybe if I had to say anything, maybe you go, you know, maybe he's the big bad wrestler. There's no doubt, top guy, right?
Yep.
And then I'm a big bad wrestler, top guy, right? But maybe I'm a little bit physically bigger, so that maybe, you know, maybe that helps me out.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe it doesn't. He's awesome. I mean, shit. You know, you got to go in there ready to go. He's got a tight, works his front headlock well, and he doesn't stop. And so he's one. And then there's Craig's leg lock attack.
Just before we move on to other competitors, just on the topic of leg locks, I mean, you've been in the jiu-jitsu game for a really long time. But you would have noticed that leg locks have just exploded on the scene of jiu-jitsu, particularly in the last few years, you know, with the Danaher Death Squad and all those guys. And then just speaking of Craig, who, you know, sort of taken the world by storm through leg locks, among other things, but like his leg locks have become really prominent in the community. Have leg locks been a part of your game for a long time? What was your experience coming through jiu-jitsu with them? And is that something you particularly, you know, do you focus on them more now?
I'm more aware of them now. I work on them, absolutely work on them more now, for sure. There's no doubt about that. So, I work on defending and I had a few tricks that I used to do.
Yeah.
I think I'm probably like, if you, like Craig Jones is 100% effective and 100% leg lock oriented. Would you guys agree?
In terms of his overall style,
I would say he's
a massive part, but he's got a lot of other elements and tools I've seen.
He does, but you know,
but
what I mean,
like, I guess that's the first thing you're gonna have to worry about against him.
Well, I think with, like, look at the Jake Shields match, he dove right for it.
Boom. Yeah,
you know, there was. So my point is, like, if you're rating it that way, I would probably say I'm 25%. I got a little bit of a threat there and things, but I don't. That's not necessarily what the angle I'm going to take.
Mm.
You know, but the problem is too. This is an interesting point. As a top guy and a pressure passer and takedowns and all the things that we do, and DJ the same way. From a top position, there's not a lot of leg locks, so we're not in the bottom position to hit them, to get into De La Hiva or go into X guard and look for an ankle and that business. So, you know, it's not in our face, but I do, when I am on the bottom, I do have some tricks off the bottom that I hit. And, you know, sometimes I go, wow, man, maybe I should just play bottom more. Like I'll go with a guy in practice, right, who has a good guard, but I know I'll physically dom, you know, I'll grind him out, you know, and I would, you know, beat him, but I might not sub him. But I'll beat them, you know? And then I'll play bottom with the same guy. And then I'm like knee barring and hitting some different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's whenever you go, wow, maybe I should open myself up and let me do. It's a shame I just don't. Maybe I should do that, go that. That looks like an easier path.
Right.
Shoot, I didn't have to grind with this guy. I got the only way I've ever subbed this guy is by a footlock or a knee bar and different things. Man, maybe there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if something's efficient, you know, it's going to conserve energy and it's an optimal strategy. If you can put someone away in a minute like Craig did with Jake Shields, why not? Why grind for 10 minutes?
I agree. That's one thing about Craig Jones. He's finished people quick. So, you know,
get
spoiled.
Was it a big surprise for you? I mean, you know, somebody sent you a friend request. This is, I'm guessing, pre-ADCC. You know, was that a big shock for you to see him go through ADCC like that?
Absolutely, man. No doubt about it. Now, in hindsight, being 2020, Craig Jones is an Oki guy, and he has heel hooks.
Yep.
And he's been to the ADCC. If you write that down on paper and you put Leandro Lowe and everything he's done, he's been really in the gi, right?
True.
Mm.
So when you match them up, you think if you're not really paying attention, you're going to think, wow, Lowe's probably going to win that match.
Well, the thing that surprised me, though, is that Leandro Lowe had beaten Gordon Ryan, I think, within the year prior to that.
Yeah, you think that. So
I felt like, okay, you know, if Gordon Ryan, I mean, at that time, it was question. I feel like Gordon Ryan's a lot bigger than Craig, so I thought that he'd be able to enter maybe leg locks a little bit easier. I wasn't so sure, but,
I think that's, this is, who wants to break it down that much because Craig deserves all the credit. But if you want to look at it in hindsight, you say, well, wow, Craig really, that was a pretty good, interesting matchup, come to think of it, being that Craig's all no-gi and he's big footlock guy and Leandro Lowe's competing in the IBJJF with no footlocks. Mm. So maybe when Craig hurt him early, that threw Leandro off and Craig gained, a mental advantage and thought, oh shoot, I can hang with this guy.
Right.
I'm in there. And then, before you knew it, he got his back, which I think Leandro was hurt from. Shocked and hurt from the.
He looked like a wounded animal running away, trying to escape after that first heel hook.
But when you look at it now, what would be interesting is to see if they did it again. There's no surprises now. Yeah. Leandro Lowe would know exactly how to approach Craig Jones, and he probably would be more mindful of what's happening, right? I think Leandro Lowe might have walked into that tournament maybe a little overconfident.
Yep. But what an animal Leandro Lowe is. I mean, you saw like the world championships were on the past weekend, and that guy's making it to the final of his weight division in absolute. I mean, I don't know how that guy's still walking around. I don't know what he did to his knee, but that was a nasty tear.
Yeah, well, you mean when he hurt his knee with Craig?
Yeah.
Well, I hurt... Well, that leads me to a whole new thing. I hurt my knee last year.
Yep.
And it hindered my whole year. It's a nightmare.
Right. What did you have done with it?
You want to talk about no fun, but it does heal. It took me about 6 months,
right,
and I'm great now. I got no knee issues.
Is that something you have to worry about?
Well, what I'm saying is with him, he had plenty of time to – Leandro Lowe has had plenty of time to heal now. So, I mean, I think he was – I mean, that was last – yeah, so he's okay now. I mean, and he was able to do all that. But remember, people aren't really attacking his knees.
True.
He's not a finisher either in the IBJJF.
Not so much anymore, anyway, yeah.
Well, he beats everybody by points by out-hustling them. And
yeah.
That's a testament to his cardio. I mean, it's amazing that he just out-maneuver and positions you.
Oh, yeah, man, he's sort of a ferocious scrambler. Very, very technical, but, like, everything's a dogfight with him.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, the gi's a whole different animal, guys. Trust me.
What are your thoughts? Is the gi something you spend time training in, or are you pretty much a no-gi guy?
I do train in the gi.
Right.
At least two times a week.
Yep.
And it's sometimes three.
Right.
And it is a totally different ball game. So when you're talking about some of these guys that are great in gi, you're talking about jazz and tap.
Yep.
It may be grappling, but they're different stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at JT Torres. He won the ADCC. He couldn't, and he didn't even get to the semis in gi. Lepre won again.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets...
see what I mean? So
yep.
You want to really get on. I mean, Craig Jones beat. So you look at that again in hindsight and go, well, I could see how maybe he pulled that off. He kind of caught him by surprise, and he executed well, and he hurt him early, and... Holy shoot, Leandro's like, I'm in a freaking war here. Boom. And then, that was it. And then he went on to tap Santana. It was probably more, the Santana one was probably more shocking.
I think so, because it was a more traditional sort of, a flying triangle is not something really Santana hasn't seen.
Well, it was interesting how it happened. Santana went for, Craig Jones gave him the double or the single leg. I know exactly what he did.
Yeah,
and when Murillo bent down, Craig just dove up for the triangle.
Yeah, that was amazing. Very sneaky.
He went top. Yeah, Craig was top, stood up, let Murillo go. Yeah, I remember the transition.
Yeah,
and he sucked him right in there.
Yeah, he kept hold of that wrist and was shin to shin.
So I had just gone against Santana. So I thought Santana was going to the finals at that point.
Yeah.
Interesting story. If I had beat Santana, I would have had Craig.
Yeah. How was it?
I got to admit, listen, I got to admit, in hindsight, I would have been like, oh, that's a good matchup. I'll take that.
Yep.
But look now.
A lot's happened since.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a great matchup. He's a freaking it's a war. You know, you got a war on your hand. So, you know, that's not going to be an easy go.
Yeah.
But it's so funny. We were trying to play the brackets before that weight was disgustingly tough. And I remember a friend of mine, won't mention his name, goes, well, we were going to everyone. He goes, hey, and then you got those guys from Australia. It doesn't really matter where they put them. That's what he said. I swear to God, he said that.
Yeah. I think most people around the world thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, most people. I mean, it's not just like I'm speaking, you know, most people would have said that.
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of belief in some of our guys. You know, you can see them doing things like, Craig it was only a couple of years ago, really, three years ago, I think. Craig was at the World Championships as a purple belt in the Geeks. You know, I went over with myself and him and the rest of the team. Went over and, he made it to, I think, the bronze in the open weight then. And, you know, it looked amazing, but then started focusing on no-gi and it was just a world of difference from there.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's a completely different game. Completely different. Like, you can't look at the top gi guys and look at the top no-gi guys. You know, most of the time, besides Autos, first of all, besides Autos, they're usually totally different names.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have totally different names. I don't know the Australian guys in the weight, the other guys. I'm going to have to look up some of them. I know Craig has a teammate in it.
Yep. Ben Hodgkinson.
And there's another guy, another one. Then there's Charles Nigromonti.
Yep.
He just beat Galveo in the gi.
Yeah, right.
But don't be tricked by that. Like, I give Charles all the credit in the world. But at the same time, that's a 6-minute time match in the gi. So it was a judge's decision. So it's a good win, but we're in a no gi tournament now. Different rule set.
Exactly.
Completely different.
Different pace, different grips, everything.
But I watched Charles Nigromonti beat Craig Jones 7-0 IBJJF.
Yep.
At the no gi worlds.
Pass
Shut him down. 7-0, right? So, but, you know, different, again, once again, different rule set. The first 5 minutes are no points in ADCC and IBJJF. Everything I do, I'm getting credit for.
Well, exactly. The thing,
so
and also, the,
I'm more excited to go after the guy. You know.
Yeah. Well.
And then also, you can't attack the legs, the heel hook. So
exactly.
That was taken away.
Yeah.
So that guy's good, Charles Nigger. I expect Charles Niggerani to be solid, solid as can be.
Yeah.
So what? You got Charles. You got DJ. Oh, Michael Perez.
Yeah. Another awesome dude from Atos. You actually beat Craig at one of the recent events.
Yes. Yes, he did. I saw it. He tried a wrist lock at the Kaisei grappling thing. Kasei.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Talk about Kasei. I was irritated I didn't get in on that. I wanted that one. I'd rather been on that one. Man, it was a 6-minute point only match. See, this is a different. This is a much. This. The 6-minute point. Is not to Craig Jones's advantage.
Right. No, it's
this
more
one
to yours.
This one would probably be a much more. This is more advantageous for, you know, a non-wrestler type, like Perez. He's another tough guy. Good wrestling, tricky. Got the great workout partners. He's won a lot of stuff. He's another guy you can't look at. He did at ADCC. He went with Yuri Simones even the whole match. He's tough. That's another tough guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to overanalyze it. You just want to say he's tough. You don't want to waste too much energy thinking about it because you know you got a war on your hands.
Yep. Yep.
That's a war. Michael Perez is another war. They're all wars.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're all tough.
So I guess rewinding a little bit, how did you make the transition from wrestling to jiu-jitsu? And, you know, do you think your wrestling style had some transferable benefit, beyond the sort of standard control and balance components?
Yeah, what wrestling does is it gives you the physicality part because it gives you the physicality part because you're just going to be naturally stronger and all these little things that maybe a guy that does jiu-jitsu, maybe who started at a later age, is going to have a real hard time catching up to.
Yep.
So that part of it is definitely, it's going to give you the grind and, you know, it's also going to give you that stand up wrestling part. I mean, let's face it. You start everything in wrestling's based on the takedown, and look at freestyle. There's very little even on the mat. It's different. It's a different sport again, but you know, the qualities that you can bring over. And then the pressure, if you can start, DJ is a perfect example. Look at the game he plays.
Yep.
He's looking for that. He's looking for that top position. He's going to pressure the shit out of you. And then he's going to cut on that knee, or he's going to lock you. And then he's going to get his points.
Yep.
And he uses really nice. You can't, so DJ, like myself, you can't really take us down. You can't. It's really unlikely that's going to happen, right? So yep. The guy's going to be, so that forces the guy to play bottom. So that forces the guy that he has to submit you. Okay, that's a tough game. I mean, I'm not saying, but that's a tough game. I mean, but then you got to say, okay, well, if he's not going to submit you to win, he has to score. He has to do something like sweep you.
Yeah.
Well, then the wrestling gives you that balance and that base. So it's really hard. It's really hard to sweep that guy. Develop that base. And not every wrestler gets the jiu-jitsu game. Like, I think, you know, looking back, I was pretty talented. I had Pablo Popovich.
Yeah,
as an instructor. Yeah, I'm very no-gi oriented. That's how I came. I mean, that's how he brought me up. You know, no-gi practices, going to pro training. I mean, he didn't grade me a lot in the gi. I mean, I was busy training for wrestling.
Yeah.
I was helping, you know, main training partner and guy that took that got him ready. And then our focuses were no-gi, IBJJF, Worlds, Pan Ams, you know, ADCC. He didn't even think about all the gi stuff that was going on. He kind of was non-interested. I look back at that, by the way, and I wish he was a little more on the gi and pushed me, because I feel like I'm missing that. But I mean, with Pablo, he, I worked with him through his no-gi world, and I watched him do the AD. I watched him win the ADCC.
Yeah.
So that's very valuable experience in my background. I've watched these matches, and I watched him do it. So I mimic his game. I mean, it was a winning game. Take down, pressure passing, looking for the angle, put the pressure on, stay solid, good posture, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so you guys, from what I remember, you guys had an enormous, you know, quite a talented training group. You know, I think it was yourself, Pablo Popovich, Cyborg.
Oh, my God, yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, we call it the Avengers.
Ah, that's it, the Avengers. So, yes, you're one of the Avengers, I remember now. Dude, yeah. Man, I remember coming through jiu-jitsu, you know, as a white belt. I think probably, you know, Cyborg and Ryan Hall, my favorite grapplers coming through. Cyborg, man, like one of the most exciting grappling styles out there. Absolute beast of a man. You know, the tornado guard, just the way he flows for like an ultra heavyweight.
Oh, he's something else, huh?
Yeah, absolute beast.
He rolls like a lightweight.
So, I mean, that must have been like an absolutely incredible sort of experience for your training, you know, you bringing that wrestling pedigree into that room. But then you're training with guys like Pablo Popovich and Roberto Cyborg Abreu. That's only going to make you better.
Right. And then that was a big mess when Pablo left. He went, he's out of here. He's not here anymore. But, so I got the benefits of that, you know, that strong top game, and I got to go against guys with great guards like Cyborg and Wagner.
Yep.
You know, Wagner has a great guard. You know, these guys down here in Florida have great guards. So, you know, I attribute a lot of my success to being able to, I've battled these great guards. There's not too many guards that I haven't seen,
yeah,
that I haven't dealt with or tried to break down.
Yep.
It's crazy down here with the talent. There's people you never even heard of that are super good. They just don't compete. It's insane down here. You shake a tree and black belts fall out.
I fought against a guy in the Abu Dhabi World Pro, black belt against a fight sports dude named Will Durkee. Funny enough, I was a jiu-jitsu black belt.
Another one, yeah.
Yeah, but then he's also...
I used to work out with him.
Yeah, a poker, a World Series of Poker bracelet winner. It's just pretty interesting to have on the resume.
He's a gnarly dude. Yeah, he's got some. He's not, he came from Pennsylvania, by the way, where I came from. He was a wrestler.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So it sounds
like
the,
I said, I picked up on it. I think I had a little bit of gift for this. I think this was something like, no, I don't think all wrestlers thrive. I think it helps a lot, but I don't think either one, they don't give into it, or two, they maybe they don't stick to it, or three, you know, they're just, they don't get it. I think I got it. I stuck with it, and I kind of had a knack for it. So it's worked for me.
So what do you think is that limiting factor then for wrestlers coming into jiu-jitsu? Why is it that some of them, you know, just don't pick it up? Because you'd think that it's wrestling sort of teaches you a mindset for learning, you know, through the drills and repetition and the intensity and that grind.
The physicality and the aggression, right?
Yeah, because I think Kaya Terrace...
I know exactly what it is. Well, I was blessed with great coaches.
Yeah.
Great guys around me. So I was able to really learn jiu-jitsu. I learned it, you know. Well, yeah, so anyway, I think, you know, I gave into it. I was around a lot of high-level guys, and you know, I was able to evolve. A lot of guys, you know, maybe they don't get that exposure to really good guys like a Cyborg and maybe come up the right way. Or, you know, maybe they get frustrated with the whole situation of
starting from the bottom.
Yeah, it's a difference. And then also you got to take, and I'm one of them. This is probably one of my problems. I probably would have been a lot better if I'd have taken losses better.
Yeah.
Oh man, I just took them so personal, man. It was just stupid. If I could change something about myself, that's what I would do. I'd be a lot more easy go with this and just chalk it up as a good day or a bad day and learn from it. Because, you know, you can always come back and fight again. Well, I would just take it hard. I took it personal sometimes. And, because in wrestling, they hold your record. You're like, in wrestling, you got a record.
Right.
And it's publicized.
And losses are permanent, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, wrestling is you know, it's more accountable. Whereas jiu-jitsu, you enter tournaments, and let's say I lose 5 Pan Am championships, but I win one. I'm always a Pan Am champ.
Exactly.
So that's what people don't forget. People, you know, you might have to lose 4 to win that 5th.
Yeah, it's an interesting point.
You know, it is, because you don't really know all the losses that people have gone through and what has exposed you to get to the level you're at, or the problems that you've been able to solve or haven't. But anyway, I'll just say the wrestling journey can sometimes, some wrestlers can't take that journey. They can't take the losses and the ups and downs.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
This is a sprint. This is a marathon. Yeah, this is a marathon. This is not a sprint, this sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, wrestling's more of a sprint. Wrestling is more of a sprint because you have 4 years. You know, you have 4 years in high school or college or whatever it is. Whereas jiu-jitsu, you got belts and years to develop.
I mean, so I guess tell us a bit more about your jiu-jitsu journey, in the sense that, you know, you've been on the scene for, what, around 20 years, I believe.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And you know, you probably started a decade before the Birambola was even a thought in the training room.
Hey, some girl just came up to me where I was at my car, and she goes, "Hey, are you here for the?" And I didn't let her finish the sentence, and I said, "You mean the dance?" Anyway,
I did catch some of it.
Well, anyway, I took about 5 years off of college. When I got out of college, I was in Pennsylvania. Jiu-jitsu wasn't really a big thing there. It was just in its beginning phases. So, you know, I played around. I used to follow it on the internet and stuff. I used to think grappling and submission wrestling was really cool.
Yeah.
But I really didn't have anywhere to train. Like it was great in Pittsburgh. There was like 5 or 6 guys that did it. That was it. So I would roll around with those 5. I always stayed in shape being a fitness guy. Was for the modeling thing. That was kind of like my sport. I want to be in shape, and I want to look good, and I want to be, you know.
Yeah, so Zoolander approach. And then
and I would do the jiu-jitsu just as a workout. It wasn't that important to me. It was important, but, you know, I used to go in there and kind of, to be honest, I used to go in there and kind of beat everybody, so I really didn't value in. I used to think, oh, well, wrestling's the best and I can still beat everyone. What do I care?
Yeah.
That's really it. But in Pittsburgh, you know, you probably, a lot of the guys were, there weren't high a level Leandro Lowe, you know, Craig Jones. So maybe if I went in there and got my ass handed to me, I'd either one, got super motivated, or two, would have put my tail between my legs and said, screw this. So anyway, I stayed and I entered the Arnold. I entered the Arnold World thing.
Right. Was this like an Arnold Classic type jiu-jitsu tournament? Because we've got that down in Australia now. We've got the Arnold Open.
I just opened. It was interesting. I just joined up, and I joined the pro division. And I had like 6 months of some grappling training. And I did real well, and I made it to the semis. And I lost to a brown belt. So then it was kind of in my system.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I end up moving to Florida. I kind of hunted down. I went to Brian Simmons and Grappler's Quest put me in a 8-man USA Nationals things in Grappler's Quest. And I, you know, with a bunch of black belts and purple belts. I remember, I look back now and I didn't belong in that bracket, but here I was jumping steps because I was such an elite wrestler and done good. You know, I had that, but I needed a lot more jiu-jitsu training. But I did the tournament and I lost, and it was a good match. It wasn't bad. It's like points to a really good ATT kid from Brazil.
Yep.
So I knew then I watched Pablo, Marcel, and all these guys dominate, and I'm like, I'm moving to Florida. That's it. So then I moved to Florida, and that's when I hooked up with Pablo and ATT. But then Pablo left ATT. Then I had to make a decision, and I just stayed with Pablo. I'm not sure that was the best decision back, but I did stay with him. For the MMA, I should have probably went with ATT.
Right.
But I stayed with Pablo.
Do you still train with Pablo Popovich?
I got more. He's gone. He lives in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, right. Okay. I mean, he did somewhat disappear from the world.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's exactly common knowledge. So that's obviously taken up a jiu-jitsu job over there?
Yeah, he just got tired of Florida and he closed his school and he decided he was going to, the Sheik, who he had a good relationship with, gave him a good job over there and he took it and that was it. He left.
Actually, that's right. There was a little bit of drama around that, wasn't there? I think I remember reading about, didn't get held at gunpoint in his own home.
Yeah, well, I wasn't there, but at the wrestling practice, Thiago Silva, a guy from ATT, a fighter.
Yeah.
There was just a little dispute.
Just a little one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was a little dispute. And, Pablo's ex-wife, or the wife he was with, started some shit between me. She's the one that kind of egged it on.
Mm.
She egged the other guy on because she was so angry at him. They almost got real ugly. It was a shame what happened. But it got cleared up.
That's good.
And it got cleared up. Everything's fine. And everyone moved on. And he moved to Abu Dhabi. That was it. He moved there and he closed his business. Once someone comes and it's in the paper that someone showed up with a weapon, it kind of hurts business.
Yeah. So, I mean, that obviously had more immediate ramifications on his school and jiu-jitsu. And so this is where you were training at the time?
Yeah, that was a big shakeup. That's when I kind of left the scene for a while. It was hard for me because...
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, interesting story, because then that's when Wagner and him split. So there was a little bit of a beef there. And then that's when, right before that, he had just fired... It was crazy, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know. He had just gotten rid of Jay and Fred, Moncayo brothers.
Right.
The Moncayo brothers were his black belts. I don't know. He just got rid of them. And then Fred went with Jay, and they went open to school in Boca. So listen to this. This is interesting. So you had Moncayo brothers up in Boca, which is about 15, 20 miles away. Then you had Wagner 15 miles, 30 miles west. Then you had Pablo. Then you had Cyborg, who Pablo and We were all a team. So I probably handled it wrong. I probably should have just not given a shit about it and just got my training in. But I kind of didn't want to offend anybody. So I just moved.
Right.
I didn't want to be anyone's side. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to pick Wagner's side and then dog Pablo. And I didn't want to pick Pablo's side and dog Jay and Fred. So I did stay training at Pablo's. By then, Wagner went down to Cyborgs, and then that kind of stopped. We didn't go there anymore. And then that's whenever that. Well, I don't know. Oh, man, it even goes deeper than that. Shoot, then there's even... Man, I'd be putting it out there if I threw everything out there. Holy moly. But it's kind of an interesting story. All right, so AJ Sosa was Wagner's student. All right, Australia, Craig Jones, and all you people down here. You want to hear the story?
Go for it.
Give it to us.
AJ Sosa was Wagner's student.
Yep.
AJ Sosa was a young kid, and he was very good. In jiu-jitsu, you'll get that. Like, when you wrestle in college, you deal with other college kids. When you're in high school, you deal with other high school kids. But when you deal with a belt system, you could have a 32-year-old black belt dealing with a 22-year-old black belt.
Yep.
But you're the same on the mat, but maybe maturity-wise, maybe socially, you're not really a good match. So AJ came up really fast, and he was really good, but he, you know, he was still a kid.
Yeah, he's sort of mature.
Well, he would say things that offended people, or it would just, you know, it was a little bit offsetting. So anyway, whatever happened with him and Wagner, Wagner let him go. So then AJ comes over to Pablo's, and Pablo takes him in.
Oh.
So Wagner just cuts
AJ. And this is post. This is post that incident where you've had that rift.
No, this didn't happen yet.
Right. Mm.
That didn't even happen yet. So then you had... AJ comes over, and then Pablo opens him up, puts him to work, hires him.
Yeah.
So Wagner comes over for pro training and is like, he was kind of a little bit offended. Why did you, I'm trying to get rid of JJ and whatever, you know. Listen, meanwhile, I'm on no one's side, by the way.
Yep.
But you know, I'm trying, and then you hire him. But meanwhile, Pablo had just fired Jay and Fred. Like maybe 3 weeks earlier. So they're scuffling for a job, hurting for money. Wagner's putting Jay and Fred to work. Pablo's showing no remorse. AJ's coming over to Pablo's. We're all the Avengers, by the way.
Right.
See what's going on here? Yeah. This is crazy. So it got started to get uncomfortable to even go to practice. I mean, it was just too much. So you had, like I said, Jay and Fred. And Boca, Wagner out west. Pablo's kept doing what he was doing.
And you had, and I think you had Buchecher even flying in as part of this, right?
No, that was before. The Avengers were going. You mean who had him flying in?
Yeah. Oh, I was referring to Marcus Buchecher Almeida.
No, I know, but who was flying him in?
Right.
No, I'm asking you.
Oh, who I don't were know. You saying?
Oh, well, yeah, about a year or two before when the Avengers were really strong. Buchecha was there a lot, but he was more of a checkmate guy.
Gotcha.
But yeah, and then Cyborg had a big ADCC camp way after that, and he invited everybody. That was really interesting. Adolfo Rivera, everyone was there.
Amazing.
Everybody. But I wasn't there. I had left the scene by then. I was so uncomfortable in 2000. That's why, you know, in 13 and 14, I really didn't train. I just taught MMA. And I didn't roll with a black belt or anyone good for probably a good year and a half, 2 years. I moved to West Palm. I got the hell out of there. I didn't want anything to do with that drama.
Right. So did this drama between, you know, you had AJ Souza, he was from Wagner Roche's, moved over to Pablo's, got hired. And, you know, you had these pro sessions, you know, the Avengers. Did that sort of spill over into the training? Was there sort of an extra intensity? Was it like a, you know, was it like a, obviously?
No, listen, that was all over by then. That right. was done because once Wagner left Pablo, they went and trained down at Cyborg at the Avengers. That event, Pablo was no longer an Avenger, nothing.
Right.
And I didn't I just stayed training at Pablo's for a while, and that was that. Like, I kind of wasn't driving to Miami, and then slowly but surely is when I kind of, well, 2013, I helped Pablo train for the ADCC. I helped him train. So it carried on to 2013. But I was still into other things. I was moving on. I was trying to get fights in MMA. It was crazy. That's the craziest sport of all time. It's
absolutely.
I mean, everyone, if your opponent's not getting injured, you're not getting injured. The promoter's even legitimate, you know, or the show doesn't get canceled, you know, you better count your blessings, because it's just, and then there's no money in it.
Yeah, there's only money, like, really, if you're in that top few percent.
So then what happens is you start rushing fights, trying to get your name. See, at one point, I was at a really good spot in MMA, but Joe Silva was not biting on me. I was 5-1 pro. Only loss was a cut. I was ready to go. I could have been in the UFC. Listen, I'll say it. There are many guys in that UFC that weren't half as good as me. The ATT got everyone a tryout for that stupid show. Everybody. I could name names, but I don't want to, you know. They were nowhere near had wrestling and jiu-jitsu like me and the athletic ability, but they had Laborio calling and saying, hey, put these guys in. I didn't have Henzo or Laborio or some big guy calling in for me. I was with Pablo, who was an ADCC guy, so I didn't get the clout. I didn't have that phone call.
Yeah.
And Pablo's an MMA guy. So that was a tough – that's why I said I probably could have went to ATT for the MMA. But I didn't. I kind of picked my path when I stayed at Pablo's. Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, I stayed out of the scene, and that's whenever, you know, everyone went their own direction. And that's when Pablo left. Cyborg and Wagner continued the Avengers or what they were doing. And then Jay and Fred – stayed in Boca. And then AJ Sosa bought Pablo's old school. He had a couple investors, and Pablo gave it to him at a good price. So that's how everyone kind of moved on.
So they're happy ever after.
It's interesting, right? You had four or five parties in there, right? I just named the Moncayos, Wagner, Pablo, AJ. I mean, that's crazy, right? You had like four different sides.
Yeah.
It and was then crazy. Cyborg as well in there.
And then Cyborg, which Cyborg wanted to be friends with everybody. He just didn't know what was going on. He just wanted to train. He didn't know what was happening. Mm. Interesting. And then I remember AJ went down to the Miami Open, and he went against one of Cyborg's guys, Ricardo. And I remember they were yelling, kill him, kill him. Like, not kill him, but from pretty bad obscenities.
Oh, right.
And I remember that's whenever things got serious, and Pablo called one of them and says, what's up? I mean, this is a tiff and everyone's not getting along, but now you got people saying this to my guy, or, you know, to AJ, screaming at him in a tournament.
Yeah.
So that's when it got like, that was it. That was the bowling point. Meanwhile, James Brasco's not training. James Brasco's not focusing, not moving on with his career. He's not doing the IBJJF. He's not building his resume. I'm like hot potatoes. I'm just like, I don't want to go over there, and I don't want to go over there. I'm going to go build my own thing, and I'm going to go to West Palm. I'm going to go up there. So that's when I moved.
So where is your focus shifted then? I mean, you had this bit of a layoff, and you've sort of returned to grappling. Is grappling still, you know, a major centerpiece of your life, or are you focusing on other things?
No.
What's next?
Grappling has never been more focused in my life than ever. Right now, I work harder than ever. I train with great guys. I watch video. I'm as goal-oriented as I've ever been. I'm as detail-oriented as I've ever been. I have completely turned my I'm completely into it. I'm completely ready. You know, I'm working towards it. I'm improving my game. So I've come back full circle.
Do you think that's because, you know, you're ruining that missed opportunity where you feel like, I guess, those opportunities to progress were sort of taken away due to circumstances?
I lost some time. That bothered me. I thought, man, what, I should have just kept my head down and just kept training and competing, and good things would have happened. I mean, I would have had more stuff on the table. I'd worked out a lot more. I mean, it's like I just said, you don't win everyone, but you're going to win some. And I would have won some in those years, and I would have had more titles and probably more clout. I might have been offered more money for different things, like, you know. So that kind of irritates me. Yeah, I should be a little bit further along.
Yeah, I can remember from back in ADCC 2009, you know, Brawley with Steamer had that absolutely phenomenal tournament, which he pretty much won everything. He won his weight in absolute, submitting everyone pretty much in glorious fashion, except for yourself, who, I mean, you lost to him by a negative point, which was undeniably his toughest match of the tournament.
I look back at that. It's funny you say, I look back at that, and I realize I was a hot, hot commodity then, and I didn't capitalize. I beat Gunnar Nelson, and then I should have beat Braulio. I mean, everyone booed when they raised his hand. It was insane. I couldn't believe they gave it to him. Or whatever happened. Listen, Braulio Stima is a legend, but that minute, at that match, I beat him for that minute. I mean, I was there. I was right there with him.
Yeah.
But after that, man, I was also 5-1 MMA. I had everything going for me. I just didn't have the organization behind me, or I didn't, you know, I just didn't. I lost a little focus. And then what another problem was, Pablo and I were the same weight class. So people don't realize this. So I'd either, one, have to move up the master division if he was in my weight,
right,
or two, we were in the same weight. This happened many times. Check this out. We'd go to IBJJF Worlds. It would be Pablo and I in the weight, and Bahal would be there. There's an example, Bahal.
Right.
So they would always seat Pablo first and separate him and Bahal, right?
Yep.
Well, they're not putting me on Pablo's side of the bracket. They're going to put me on the opposite. So they just created a semifinal match for me that normally wouldn't happen if he wasn't. But the interesting thing was, he used to pull no shows and not even show up.
Yeah.
He did that a few times. So I'd sit stuck with Bahal in the semis or a really tough match. It should have been a finals match. But because, and then Pablo wouldn't show up. So then, I lost to Bahal that time, and Bahal got to the finals. But, you think back and go, what if I could, so then I started just going another weight or a master division, because I didn't get the hoopla. I won the absolute master one Pan Am black belt in 2010.
Right.
Double gold. You know, I did that only because I couldn't go adult, because Pablo was there. You know, stuff like that. You know, those people don't know that. You know, I was always moving around. And
yeah, it's always tough when you've got training partners who are your weight, and, you know, you've got to make that decision about who's going to actually compete in the tournament, especially when some tournaments even restricts, you know, the number of competitors you can have from the same team in the same weight class.
Well, also, too, yeah, that happens. But also, too, now I'm much more focused. I don't have to move for anybody. I don't have anyone I'm thinking about and hurting their feelings.
Have you got any tournaments or anything lined up outside of BOA?
No, I don't. Mm-mm.
So what is?
I'd like to do a few. I'd like to. Well, first of all, it's just gi season, right? And I was going to concentrate on gi this whole year. That was my focus, and I was going to do the Master Worlds and all these things. I was actually going to qualify and try to do the gi, you know, the worlds. It just happened.
Yep.
I just wanted to focus on it and challenge myself. But then the BOA thing came up.
Oh, it's a great opportunity. You can't turn down.
Right. So what am I going to do? That took a lot of the emphasis off the gi. So then I started getting back to my no-gi game.
Yep. So we're running out of time. So do you have a message?
Quick, yeah, go for it. Let me tell you something real quick. In 2015... I wanted to do the ADCC trials. I didn't do them in 13 because of China and their dog eating practices. They make me sick, right? So in 15, I wanted to do the trials. They canceled their trials in Denver. I'll remember this. And I got some stupid lawn job, right? Well, then they decided to have the freaking trials in Miami or Fort Lauderdale that year. And I found out 2 weeks before. I'm not kidding you. Go back and check. They probably announced it 2.5 weeks before. And I'm sitting there going, wow, man, well, they're having the trials right here. That's like pulling my man card. I have to show up for that. Like, yep. I don't care how much I haven't trained. I probably should get it in gear and go take a shot. Well, then I went, and I was the highest seeded guy in the weight. I got a bye first round, and I won second round. I even beat a fight sports guy that day, 4-0. Then I had a guy that I'd never heard of who was a purple belt at that time named Gordon Ryan. So I didn't know who he was, some little kid, whatever. And all I know is I had some tough wrestler guy in the semis if I had him. These matches for the trials are 3 and 3, 3 minutes and 3 minutes. Dude, I can do that in my sleep now. You know, I mean, if I'm training. Well, anyway, I went in with the match, and this kid was tough. I mean, he was he had a good strategy. Tonin was in his corner screaming his lungs out, blah, blah, blah. And it was 0-0 during the no points, and I had almost passed him. If you watch the match, I pushed him all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked like the best. I'm just saying. Then I was pushing him. I was almost passing. I did great. And then with like 3 minutes, with like 20 seconds, I was tiring out, man. But I'll tell you what. It was going right up my alley because I just went to overtime and I would have taken him down. There's no way he was at that time, especially. I just took him down when I felt like getting overtime. But I was so tired, I didn't even want to go to overtime. That's how my mindset was. But anyway, I got swept with about 5 seconds left, and he beat me. The point is, and then he went on to the finals, and then that's when Perez beat him. Close, 3-2. But the point is, then that's when he started winning everything. I think he won EBI, and I remember thinking, man, that loss wasn't so bad after all. Like, the kid's beating everybody.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, man, he was good. But that did spark me. That made me pissed. That's when I started getting serious again. And I was shooting for him the next trials. Listen, I was training for him for the next trials. You know, I wanted to avenge that loss, or I wanted that big matchup. And that's after he had beaten everybody. I mean, he had won everything, all these EBIs and stuff, you know. But it still wasn't ADCC rules, and it still wasn't that, you know. So anyway, I went to the trials, and he ended up, I guess, the Florida boy, whatever.
AJ Agazam.
Cut his eye, and Gordon wasn't allowed to. By the way, this is when Gordon was my size. Now he's huge, but
he's a bit beefier.
He tore his eye, and then he didn't do the trials. He got an invite, and he went on to win. But you know, I credit that was a point where I got very motivated to try to win, and I end up winning the tournament. You know, I end up beating some other Don Hair guy in the finals, which was a good win.
Yep.
So it was, you know, it's kind of like it was a cool story. It was cool for me. I mean, I was living my own little vision quest.
Oh, I mean, it's interesting, I guess, when you look back in any kind of competitive career. I mean, I've had losses where, you know, I was really bummed out and felt like I should have just, felt like I should have smashed the opponent. I sort of felt like I had all these opportunities and, you know, walked away really disappointed. And then you see them win a really massive tournament.
Well, at that point, there's no reason I should have lost to him. I mean, he was a purple belt. He was young. You know, he was lighter than me. It was a lack of match time and gassing issue at that point. It was. I mean, I even told him, you know, I should have beat. He knows. We know. At that time, it was just what it is. I don't like to make excuses about that. But I mean, it was just like it was enough to upset me to get me going again.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I started going down to Moncayo Brothers and I started making a real effort saying, man, I got to go win. And the sad part was I made a complete commitment to jiu-jitsu in 2017. And then I injured my knee in the fight to win. And training for the ADCC wasn't even fun. I mean, I was screaming every practice, running out, trying to ice it, getting PRP, taking cortisone shots. I remember Cyborg said to me, because I was running out of the room hurting so many times, he goes, you better make a decision. You better start and make a decision on this. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, you better make a decision on this, or this is just going to be a trip abroad for you.
Yeah.
That's how bad it got for me, because I was just hurting. Everything was hurt. I mean, my knee was, I couldn't change angles. I couldn't, But at that point, my goal became just to go to ADCC and look formidable, show up and look good. And I ended up doing that. I went the whole way with Santana and lost on a sweep late. So it was good. I ended up, that was a small battle that no one knows. But that was a battle for Brasco. Mm. You know, I showed up and I was able to get by that knee and train.
Exactly, you know, man. It's all in that journey.
Dude, everyone has their own journey going on. And they're all little battles. And some of these battles aren't publicized. People don't know what we all go through. We're all going through little battles and little things, you know, that take us through. So, you know, you may see Flow Grappling in some of these news, or there's a lot of other things going on for people.
Absolutely.
But anyway, I just felt like last year I deserved a little more credit, and I just, what could I do, man? I blew the fight to win, and then I went to the ADCC hurt. So again, that kind of sucked me into this year again. I was kind of ready to like win the fight to win title, place an ADCC, and go to Nogi World, and I was going to call it a career. Nope, I got sucked right back in. So that's where I'm at.
So James, we're gonna wrap up. Do you have any a message or anyone you particularly want to call out from the BOA? We have DJing coming up later today. We'll have Craig on in the next week. Do you have a message for them?
I got. Hell no, I'm not saying a word.
Awesome.
And the reason is, I mean, shoot, they're all animals. It's all going to be a war. No one's going to have an easy match. It's just going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be fun to be in Melbourne, and it'll be fun to see everybody. It'll be fun, you know, the whole thing will be great. And, you know, I just expect I'm coming. I'm healthy. You know, that's one thing. I'm ready to go.
Awesome. Well, we're looking forward to have you on BOA 8, which will be held on June 23rd in Melbourne. It'll be streamed on Flow Grappling. But I'm telling you, you've got to, if you're in Melbourne in Australia, you've got to come down and see it. It's an absolutely amazing spectacle. They've always been incredible shows.
World class event.
So yeah, really looking forward to having you on. Thanks for joining us, James. Do you have anything else to say?
Yeah. I want to go back to that club I was at Melbourne. That's what I want to do.
And what was that club?
I couldn't tell you. I know the taxi driver took me there.
I'm pretty sure I know where it is in Melbourne, but which one?
Sounds like King Street.
It was near downtown, near the main road.
Yeah, yeah.
Near the main road.
Yeah, it'd be King Street.
King Street, okay. That brings to mind a few things.
It was the best one because I asked for the best one. There's right. No doubt. Right. I said, take me. I want to do the best one.
Yeah. Well, so there's a lot of them in that strip there. So pardon the pun.
Not my arena.
Short, knowing the guys that I'm in and some of the people traveling and DJ, and it'll be fun. Everyone will get a chance to go out. And, you know, that it'll be a good time the whole way around. Definitely.
For sure,
definitely. It's something to look forward to. It's cool.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, James, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Excellent. Absolute pleasure, man. See you soon.
All right, buddy.